listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting program of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron. Wayne is out in Hawaii this week. How are you? He's out in Hawaii. Doing his thing with some training and coaching. So we'll definitely look forward to seeing Wayne when he gets back with a renewed spirit for sure. But we have a fantastic guest with us today. He's been on the show before, and we're going to revisit some recovery topics that we haven't talked about in a while. And so we have Brennan with us. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
So, kind of give our viewers and listeners a brief introduction about yourself, and then I'll fill in whatever you don't, but go ahead.
So I am obviously, as you said, in recovery. I'm last month had 16 months, which is the longest I've ever had. Yep. Finished kind of a residential program, then did the halfway house deal, and now obviously living on my own, doing school, stuff like that. So yeah, things are going real well. But yeah, I've had a lot of experience throughout the past 5+ years, in and out of programs and sober living houses and recovery communities all across the country. So yeah, absolutely.
A little bit of jail here and there.
Yep.
Don't forget that.
The best inpatient program for me. So,
yeah, man, you betcha. So, so proud of you. I'm sure everybody is happy for you. I know, happy for you. Another thing, you're in college. I know you're kind of turned the corner between an associate's and a bachelor's, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Yeah, I'm finishing up the semester will be the last one for the basics, and then we'll start in junior year in January. So yeah, it's good. Been able to knock out about a year and a half of school and really the year that I've been out of jail. So it's been good. It's been a productive year for sure.
Good, man. Excellent. I just love hearing that. So you're on the show before. We had talked about some topics like overstaying the welcome and the treatment center. And today we're kind of pick up on that a little bit. Just a real big emphasis in the industry right now on sober living houses, sober living environments. And that's a big business. It's a good offering. And it's good that it's there for people, mm-hmm. but there are the off times when it's maybe not the best fit for people. So, what I wanted to do is talk a little bit about that.
Well, sure. And if you didn't, for those who didn't hear the last show or didn't tune into the last show, yeah, what we kind of went over, was just how you can kind of outstay your welcome at some of these places. You know, sober living houses, halfway houses, really any recovery, residential community outside of an inpatient program is meant to be transitional. So, that's kind of what we touched on last time, how you can overstay your welcome in a way. But not to beat a dead horse there. It's a tough deal because you never want to tell anyone that they shouldn't get help or that they shouldn't take the precautions that they feel like they need to take in order to keep their sobriety intact, right? So it is a sensitive issue a little bit in that regard. I think, you know, a lot of this conversation applies to people who have been out of a residential recovery program, inpatient, outpatient, whatever, and have had systems that they've put their own systems in place or implemented systems that they've learned in rehab, in sober living, in recovery communities, into their own life for an extended period of time. Believe it or not, sometimes the question still arises, should they go back into a residential recovery community? And that does happen, believe it or not. And I think that you know, that's kind of where this conversation is about, is that a step backwards? Can that actually maybe even harm their recovery? Can that maybe, can that even, you know what I'm saying? Can that be a setback for them as opposed to a necessary precaution that they're taking?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll go ahead and kind of jump in there with a few examples kind of from my genre, if you will. I did a lot of consulting for financial service firm, a lot of close range coaching for folks, and in various industries, financial industry, legal professionals, medical professionals, and so on. So for some of those folks that, you know, they have a problem, they go into inpatient treatment, and then they come out, they are in a position, there's this bandwidth of person that has a family, has a sustainable family. They may still be getting help, et cetera, but they have a family, they have a job, they may even have a sponsor, or they have a recovery program that they link to by the telephone, by an app. You know, so you still have that going. I know you do a lot of telework with your sponsor.
That's right.
So here's this kind of person that has some things in place, and to go into a sober living environment, to a sober living home, may be detrimental or not the best fit.
Sure. Well, yeah, and even kind of on a lesser scale in a way. I'll put an example out there. So even for myself, right, like in the process of making a move, right, from the panhandle of Texas back down into the DFW area, you know, there was some suggestions of like, okay, when you're moving, would you consider moving back into a sober living house, transitional house environment, just to kind of, and you know, and I thought about that, you know, with an open mind, but to me, with my situation right now, with the way my recovery is right now, to me that would feel like a step backwards in a way, and to take a step further, I almost wouldn't be able to, some of the things that I've implemented, kind of on my own, that keep me sober, that keep my head right, that keep me, that, you know, the trajectory of my everyday life going in a certain way, I kind of wouldn't have that taking that step back into a transitional program. And so I think that applies to a lot of people. You know, I think a lot of people, that, you know, that question comes up probably more than you would think. You know, a lot of people think that once you finish the inpatient, even finish the sober living, that's it, and that question never comes up. But I think it still does, and I think that's why this is an important conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it is an important conversation, and again, we're not saying this applies to everybody, because it doesn't apply to everybody. There's people have different circumstances, their recovery program is different, their resources are different, their relationships are different. They're either in a marriage or a committed relationship or not. I mean, so there's just a whole lot of things here. So I don't want our listeners to think that we're cutting some sort of a pass and saying that the sober living needs to be skipped. And it certainly doesn't. As both of us have very knowledgeable about those environments and spent a lot of our lives in training in those environments. We know a lot about that. But getting back to what you're saying, so let's look at that a step further. The person comes out of treatment, they're in this kind of, I work with a lot of nationally known defense attorneys. There's an app that they all use that's kind of like their sobriety partner, Sober Coach, and they use it, and they can access it. They can go to group meetings. They can go to individual sponsorship, individual coaching. They can do that. And these guys are going you know, they're preparing for court cases, very complex court cases, going to court, testifying, coming back out, not a lot of time because you're, you know, you're preparing for the next case. And so, you know, they have families perhaps, or spouse, et cetera. And so, you know, they really, and other familial and personal commitments, and in addition to that. So being in a, and being in an institution, and it is an institution, being in an institution like that, hey, I need you to, your curfew's at 6 o'clock. Hey, I need you to get off your technology and not study for that case tomorrow. Hey, we're not going to let you use your phone after 10 o'clock. You know what I mean? Hey, lights out is here, and get up, you know, and do your chore. Anyway, so those are good things, right? I mean, those are great things, but they might not be the best fit for certain folks. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, right. And it goes without saying that, it, you know, an undeniable fact is that wherever you are, however you're getting it, you got to have community, right? That's part of recovery. You got to have accountability. You got to have community, you know, whether or not you choose to indulge in the AA model or not, the concept of a sponsor or a mentor or someone that's A, holding you accountable, B, you can kind of discuss private emotional stuff with, and someone that holds you accountable, that's got to be there, right? And so that's one thing that, you know, that goes without saying, obviously. So again, yeah, whatever, you know, form that looks like, whatever that comes in, you know, that's okay. You know, it doesn't always have to be the traditional deal. Right. I guess an important point, I think, is let's say you are, you know, a year clean, and you're considering, someone suggests to you, a friend, a family member, or even just in your own head, you're thinking, hey, should I make the decision to come back to a sober living house, a halfway house, a transitional living? And like I said, as we, you know, kind of talked about in the last show, sometimes some of those places can be used, you know, can be used by people as somewhat of a crutch or a safety net instead of a transitional place to get them to the next step in their life. And so I think that if you're still kind of a year down the road, you've been out of a program, you've been out of a transitional recovery environment, and you're considering, you got to ask, why is that? Why that is, you know, and there may be something, there may be a piece missing in your recovery that's causing you to feel like you need to have residential structure, you know. And so I think that's something to look at, right? And look, it's not a bad thing. Maybe you go back and you figure that out, and then you leave, and that, and like I said, that's what those places are for. But if you find yourself as someone continuously, anytime something comes up or there's, you know, conflict, or, you know, you failure, tough times, I don't know, you're struggling, if your knee jerk reaction is, hey, let me get back to a transitional program, let me get to a sober house, that may be something to look at. And again, that's just my opinion. I just, well, you know, I've seen that, you know, that's, well, not hypothetical. I've seen that in people.
Oh, I know you've seen it, and I've seen it. And we talk about, you know, here where my private practices, in both locations, we have these failure to launch kids, and the failure to launch kids are these 20, 21, 23, still looking weed. You know what I mean? Not in school, not engaged, no job, just living off the fat of the land. And so that's one form of this kind of, that's one iteration of failure to launch. But the other iteration of failure to launch, just like you said, person goes through inpatient program or jail or whatever it is, hardcore residential, goes into this transitional environment, but then is kind of stuck there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's, I call them rehab lifers, and that is a real thing. There's, you know, people who have been in and out and in and out and in and out for, you know, we talk, there's two kinds, you hit on it a little bit. There's the failure to launch and the 18 to 25 crowd. And then there's the kind of lifers, if you will, who have been repeated that cycle for.
Now look, if that person, but I do want to say, if failure to launch guy blows up and has a full on relapse, absolutely he's got to go back. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, 100%.
I know we're on the same page. Hey, if this person lapses or relapses, hey, they need to go back. But if they're stuck in their recovery. They may not be stuck in their abstinence, but they're stuck in their lifestyle, their issues of daily living, right? Other aspects of their life that they need on deck and moving forward. Let's talk about an example. I guess this might be a good segue into an example that you and I talked about pre-production of a young man who was in a very intensive program and then is now I think he was in their transitional phase for, was it over a year or just 6 months? And then he got his apartment. I forgot.
I think around a year. Okay. But no, okay. I think that's an important distinction that you made, that, you know, that with this conversation, this is more a lifestyle issue and not my recovery, my sobriety is in jeopardy. Yeah, by all means, if you genuinely feel like you're even just take it a step further, not have already relapsed, even if you're heavily considering relapsing, hit with crave, you know, like the big book talks about the phenomenon of craving, mm-hmm. that's going on, then yeah, it may be a good idea to go into a place where you have a little bit more accountability, direct accountability. So. Absolutely. I think that's a really good, you know, distinction to make. But yeah, with this guy, you know, I think this, you know, to kind of contrast the examples we talked about earlier, this is a guy who, like you said, he, you know, had been through an inpatient program, a really strenuous inpatient program at that, went through the sober living, but upon leaving the sober living, kind of just got, you know, keep in mind, this is a program that doesn't follow the AA model. You know, it doesn't have sponsors, et cetera. So he leaves. And then now all of a sudden he has no community. He's in a state that he's not from, where he knows nobody except for the people he was in the program with. And they've kind of moved on. Right. And so, you know, the guy's feeling depressed. He's feeling discouraged. He's feeling unmotivated. He's sleeping in late, not going to work. So that kind of touches on something you said, something you were talking about, of it being the lifestyle issue, right? It's certainly if left untreated, that could, unaddressed, that could potentially lead to, you know, sobriety being in jeopardy. But to look at the issue alone there, it's a recovery lifestyle problem, right? And so for a guy like that, maybe getting plugged into another community where he can, upon, look, you know, the best thing about recovery communities, obviously, with, you know, initially getting clean, getting your head clear, but it's what you can take from it, right? The relationships that you take, the stuff that you learn, that you implement in your own life, 6 months, a year, year and a half, 2 years after you leave, right? So that he missed that. Some there was a disconnect somewhere. Either he didn't learn it or he didn't apply it. And so that's, you know, that's something that maybe if he chose to go back somewhere, he could pick that up and take it with him moving forward. So yeah, in a case like that, that could potentially be an option.
Yeah.
For nothing else, just to develop the relationships and support that he can use after leaving the program.
Let's stay on this one for a little bit. Okay. So here's a guy. He was there. He was in a sober living house. He's by himself, more or less, from what I hear. My understanding is more or less isolating. He's missing work. He's not getting up. Huge red flag. As you said earlier, if that guy's not using already, it's at hand, right around the corner. Right. You know, but at the same time, you know, that person needs a catalyst, because he's still in the same city and state as a lot of guys that were there in the transition with him. there a lot of those guys are still in the same town. Mm-hmm. He probably has their social media, probably has at least two or three of them cell phone number, you know. Mm-hmm. I wonder why he doesn't re-engage.
I think sometimes that can be a little easier said than done. I mean, that's why I'm such a fan of the AA model, right? Like with an AA model, you have a sponsor, right? I have a sponsor. Every morning, I send a text to my sponsor. Every night, I send a text to my sponsor. At least once a week, I have a phone conversation with my sponsor. If something comes up, if I need advice, which I oftentimes do, I give him a ring and we can sit and we can talk for an hour, right? Just about life stuff, right? If I have a big decision, if I have some choices I need to make, I call him and we handle it because I have prior experience with the treatment center this individual went to. I can tell you that's not something that their clients have when they leave. And so, yeah, while there may be people he graduated, you know, the program with, you know, they move on. The majority of them are from there, or if they're not from there, they went back to their states. But the ones that are from there, they got families, they got jobs. I know guys that I've been, that I'm with right now that I was in a program with, live right down the road. And just because of schedules and, you know, I got a relationship of school, there got work, it just doesn't it doesn't happen as often as you would think, you know. That's why the importance of a sponsor to me is so huge, because I don't have to go seek out community there. That community is just kind of an understood thing between us, you know.
You know, one of the things that I'm listening to and I'm thinking about this young man who's in his apartment by himself and given that experience. And if he didn't have sponsors, really the only people he knows are the other addicts he was in the treatment program with. And maybe the only resource he has with anybody of any clean time that would function would be one of the instructors or therapists. Yep. At the original place. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those guys, they got a full-time job. They're not there, you know, necessarily, you know, they're not there to take you to raise or be your sponsor or whatever. Like, you've moved through there. And so if all you have is peers, right, you're going to get that peer feedback, which is nothing wrong with peers.
No, right.
But your sponsor does have that experience, strength, and hope, particularly the experience side of that, as well as the others. But that, man, that's, you know, see, when you're making that phone call, you're not going sideways and calling one of your homeboys from such and such Woodpile, North Carolina, or whatever, right?
Right.
You're calling somebody. I just made that up, folks, out of thin air. Anyway, but you're calling somebody that has clean time, that has experience, that has this and that and the other. So, you know, whether you call that a sponsor in the context of a 12-step program, or you call that a sponsor or accountability partner, recovery coach that has, you know, wisdom, discernment, you know, please connect with somebody. If you're not involved in a 12-step program, please. That's why we have this show. In some respects, is because of just that. You know, some people just won't do it, but they will enlist in the help of a coach, a recovery coach, sobriety coach, sober companion. So this whole other layer of service. And look, I'm pleased to say that I have made referrals. I think Bill and Bobby found, because they try this level of service, and if they can't do it, then they need to go into a 12-step program, hands down. And getting that person to make that decision of their own accord is a whole lot easier than me saying, here's what I think you need. My name is Bruce Cameron. I got 40 years in this business. And boy, no. And you know how that feels, right? I mean, you're going to run. I might as well just have horns and a tail, and you're not going to listen to anything I say. So anyhow, I think we need people engaged. As a bottom line, we need people engaged in some sort of a program of recovery and keep it going.
Yeah, and I think that's sometimes where some of the places, both inpatient and transitional places that don't follow the AA model, kind of dropped the ball. I said, you know, jokingly in a call referring to this place, once you leave the program, it's like dropping off the island in a way. And, you know, that's what it doesn't matter. Look, it doesn't matter how many books you read, what kind of knowledge you gain while you're there, no matter what kind of personal breakthroughs. Heck, you can even do the fourth step. You can do all this stuff. You can have all these seemingly, you know, emotional, maybe even spiritual experiences, but none of that matters because, you know, you're doing, you know, you experience those things under a controlled environment, right? It's, you have to have community in place and really even a routine in place once you leave in order to be able to maintain your sobriety and maintain a productive recovery lifestyle, right? And a big part of that is accountability. The whole reason we're in recovery is because we don't like being accountable to people, and we can't hold ourselves accountable. So if you think that you're going to go to a place for 90 days, even 6 months, if you think you're going to go there and then you're going to leave and then just all of a sudden magically keep yourself accountable, it's not going to happen, or it's very unlikely. So that's why the importance of a sponsor, or if you don't like the word sponsor, you don't like the AA model, like you were saying, a sober companion, a sober coach, even a life coach, hell, even a therapist maybe. But you gotta have someone that you're going to with these kind of issues to get direction, to get counsel, and really just, you know, someone to look up and kind of model your life after, right? Where it's like a, because look, with the sponsor, it's a set thing. I know I'm going to text him in the morning. I know I'm going to text him at night, where we have scheduled deals. So I don't feel like, you know, we don't want to feel like we're forcing our issues onto, like, for example, with a friend, I'm not going to call up a friend and be like, hey, I got this going on, let me just vent to you about that. Especially as men, we don't want to do that necessarily. And so I think that's why it's a good thing to have it'd be an understood deal with a sponsor or a mentor. So, I don't know where he went.
Hopefully I'm back. There I am.
Woo. We're back.
Yeah, man. Somebody knocked me off the platform there. Anyway. So, yeah, I think that, like you said, people just need to be engaged in something, whether it be a therapist, coach, recovery coach, something. And and a person with experience that can help that person make the next right decision as they move forward with stuff. So, I think that, you know, there's that gap that needs to be filled. And, you know, unfortunately, sometimes in the treatment industry, it's heads and beds, and when the insurance runs out, you're part of our aftercare program at Happy Hills Farm or whatever it is. And then that just kind of fades, you know?
Right.
And so, but, you know, I worked in prisons many years, and right, guys find the Lord, they have breakthroughs. They are on top of their game when they're in prison.
Good analogy.
I mean,
good analogy.
They got it all figured out, but it's a whole different deal once they're on the streets and they're back out.
Absolutely. And that's not that far of a reach to compare that to people in rehab. You know, it's really not. It just, like, when you, anytime you're kind of, a lot of your personal freedoms are taken away and you're on a controlled schedule, not that it's terrible. Not that even the controlled schedules in jail are terrible. But it's just when your brain kind of switches into that mode, it's a lot easier. And because I've noticed it with myself. And you don't have to be somewhere for years. You can be somewhere for it really is as little as 90 days. And and have that, you know, have that that kind of false sense of confidence, right? Like, oh, I feel so good. I'm learning so much. I had this breakthrough. I found God. I had a spiritual deal. But then when you leave, boom, you kind of get snapped back into reality. And then it's like, okay, well, what real life system, what tangible systems have you set in place now to hold you accountable? And that's why I go back to, if you don't have that and you were just kind of counting on your spiritual experiences or mental breakthroughs when you were in the program to get you through, that's not going to do it.
Right. And so, again, for many, that's why the halfway house is so important, because there's still that schedule, expectations, curfews, and those things to try to get them ready to have all that freedom back. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, the ideal setup is how it's supposed. You know, you go to a residential program, inpatient program. You stay there between 30, 90 days. You leave, you stay at a sober living house between 3 months, 6 months, or even a year. And then after that, the ideal thing is you move out with a couple of the guys that you were in the program with. You all keep holding each other accountable. And then you go on to eventually have a relationship, you know, and then go on from there. So that way there's kind of that structure all the way. But oftentimes it doesn't work out like that. You know, oftentimes it doesn't work out like that, you know, and that to kind of bring it full circle. Yeah, that's kind of where this conversation comes up. You left. Now you're having lifestyle problems. You know, you can't, hey, I can't hold myself accountable. I can't get up on time for work. I can't, I can't force myself to go to an AA meeting. I can't, you know, that then that's, you got to look at why is that? And so, yeah, that's then, yeah.
Right. And that catalyst, truly, for that young man needs to be, I mean, it's great that there's a family member that's identifying those patterns, but they, you know, having another person that even appear at this point to help this young man go to meetings and get back on track, and hopefully he'll find something like that. You know, this is kind of a random thought, and it's kind of off topic a bit, but, you know, we're talking about that fantasy picture. You go mm-hmm. there 90 days, you know, then after the sober living component, you go on with your life. Well, I know my Facebook and your Facebook, it seemed like, you know, like, hey, such and such got married and had a kid. It's like, man, but it was like years and years later that could have happened. You know what I mean? Had they not lingered mm-hmm. in that, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And that's that in some ways it's kind of stunning. Like, yeah, man, you know, I mean, anyway,
for sure. Yeah. No, I think a good, a important thing you mentioned was the issue of a catalyst, right? Like
right.
The catalyst is important. Like for me, I think that's why I've had such a difficult time staying sober for longer than 90 days to 6 months in the past, is because I was kind of missing that catalyst. We're talking about just getting clean for clean's sake type deal, you know. But now with the program that my sponsor has me on, listen to my sponsor, you know, that's, I attribute that to how I've stayed sober this time, because I'm working towards something, right? That's not just sobriety. Sobriety is just kind of a byproduct and a stepping stool to get me to my goals, right? And so the ultimate goal is not sobriety. And that's where I think a lot of programs, a lot of just the message of recovery, and as much as I love AA, even AA a little bit, gives that sobriety is the ultimate goal. And that can be kind of bleak sometimes. That can cause you to get discouraged sometimes. Because now you're 6 months sober and you're like, okay, now I'm sober.
Now what?
Yeah, this was it. This was all this, you know, and that can cause, you know, the feelings of depression, discouragement, isolation, stuff like that. And then eventually slip back into that vicious cycle. And so I think that's why you got to have that catalyst, right? You got to have something that you're working towards, and your sobriety is just a means to an end to get to that goal almost, right? Like you have to, like for me, I know I want to go to school. I want to get into the recovery industry. I want to be able to help people. I want to be able to, you know, do all that. And I know that I can't do any of that stuff. I can't finish school. I can't have that career. I can't do that without staying sober. So now on the time, and of course I, you know, obviously I, you know, it's a lifelong battle. You get tempted sometimes having a drink sounds good, but when those moments come, right, I think, man, I would be everything I do, every, all the classes I take, the homework I do every day, everything I'm working towards, work towards in the gym, all that goes away when I take the first drink, right? The whole career I'm pursuing goes away. And so I think you got to build up enough on that side of where using would just be throwing everything that you work towards every day away. That's not just sobriety.
Right.
Right.
Right. And look, I mean, the same thing. Treatment centers, the first step of this whole process is sobriety, is abstinence, is sobriety in a program.
Yeah.
That's why I get so annoyed with, like, sometimes I get these texts from Gary V or whatever. Get motivated, love yourself. Like, yeah, but what do you do next? You know what I mean? Like, how do you put that into motion so it actually means something? So you have something to show for it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, this is a what a blessing, you know, this is for you, that now that you have the mental space to say, okay, how do I transition from this college to this college? Okay, I'm looking at, you know, a psychology degree program, let's say. Okay, what classes do I need to take next? What sequence do I need to take? How long is it to graduate? You know, and then does that lead to some sort of a certification and stuff in your future, et cetera, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you, because you have the, the accountability of the sponsor and the benefit of going through a program and continued participation in a program of recovery, you have the mental space to live a fuller life.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, sobriety is the goal, is the first step, 100%. All that goes away without taking that set amount of time to focus on just getting sober. But yeah, that's also a good point, touching on that kind of Gary V type mentality that you know, that, no disrespect to old Gary V, but you know, just that kind of, motivation's all you need. Like, well, motivation is nothing without discipline, right? You know, if you can be motivated all you want, you can have all the goals you want. You can wake up and do meditations and make breakfast and coffee and work out all before 6 a.m. But if that's not generating something, if that's not moving, if you're not working towards something tangible in your life, you know, like life on life's terms type of situation, if you're not doing that, if you're not working towards something tangible, and you're just kind of staying in a world of idealisticville or hypotheticalville, that's not going to work either.
Yeah. So I got, as a matter of fact, I have a new person coming in, similar deal, kind of a shut-in, video games 24/7, this and that. You know, I think in today's world, a lot of people like, oh, well, he just uses pot. I've got rehab centers. They're like, oh, well, even if he smokes a quarter pound a day, we're not going to admit him because it's just pot. Like, damn, you know, what happened? You know what I mean? Back in the day, us old people saw that as a drug and that would get in the way of people. But nonetheless, this guy is using but unwilling to do anything else. So I'm going to do some testing about what he should do when he grows up in terms of a vocation. Because sooner or later with these folks, 26 years old is a real number. And that is the age that insurance goes away, right?
Mm.
And so, just facts. And so, you know, this guy's got to get ready for that. And his parents aren't going to, anyway, sustain the lifestyle. So we'll start with that. And I've done that. What are you going to do? How are you going to do it? And hey, let's look at this weed thing. You know, by the way,
right.
And then, the rapport is built, defenses are down, and you may be able to have an honest discussion about what chemicals are doing, what role chemicals are playing in this person's life. And sometimes, you know, you got to take that slow boat to China. And a lot of counselors, boy, they jump on that stuff like right there. You're in denial, rah, 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 you know. And man, you know, those guys are either going to go into treatment or they're going to go south, and they're not going to come out of their shell for 6 months, a year, and then what? So, hey, it's not the best path, but it is a path. And sometimes, you know, you and with coaching, we just kind of follow the client if we can. So anyway, you know, it's just kind of a good mix of your environment matters, you know, your environment matters. I can't, as a coach, right, I went into an area and started seeing clients in a particular area that was my velvet rope client, and really didn't settle for much less and got it, you know. But guess what? I put myself in environments that led to that clientele. It's just real simple. A lot of people are like, man, how are you able to get this person or that person? Hey, man, I literally positioned myself to be around those clients.
Yeah, I think one thing that you said was good, you know, talking about the hypothetical of a, you know, the kid that smokes weed. I think the biggest thing you said was the first thing we're going to talk about. Hey, like, what are your goals? And then we'll address the weed situation, right? Because if you come on to someone like, hey, you know, this is an issue, you need to stop doing this. Just no reason. Just stop doing, you know, you need to work on stop doing this. They're it's very likely that they're just going to tune you out,
right,
and not take you seriously. Whereas if you're talking to someone, you're like, hey, what are your goals? How are we going to work towards this? And then, as you said before, they kind of start to see on their own, hold on a second, I'm having a hard time doing these things that are helping me work towards my goals because I'm always high, because I'm spending the money I do have instead of investing, instead of using stuff to better my life and investments, knowledge, experiences. I'm spending that on weed, you know. Then they can kind of see like, oh shit, that maybe this actually might be a problem. Let's at least talk about it. And then boom, then all of a sudden now they've kind of saw that on their own, and that makes them a whole lot more susceptible to addressing the issue. Whereas you coming on to them and saying, hey, you know, you're a screw up for smoking weed, like you're never, you know, just kind of like you said, the slow boat to China.
Yeah, I mean, I had a situation on topic of coaching the person. They wouldn't see anybody else. I'm seeing the person. They present with quite a few psychiatric symptoms, okay? And then I go like, whoa, let's get you into a psychiatrist. And I mean psychiatrist. Okay. Trust me when I tell you. Anyway, they go to the psychiatrist, okay, and they get medicine. And just as soon as they get stable, here am I coaching, and I'm like, so what do you think you want to do now, you know, that you're stable? Well, I was thinking about maybe using ketamine or psilocybin in the comfort of my own home. I kid right. you. And it's that point with my poker face, I say, you know, it sounds like you're maybe more interested in using substances, right, than moving on with this life on life's term thing.
Mm-hmm. What? Yeah, that's, yeah. So they were trying to use ketamine and psilocybin for what now?
You're not going to believe this. It hit me like a text, but it's a kind of ketamine and psilocybin in the comfort of your own home through a medical professional.
To what? Get sober? Or
no. Just to medicate anaclytic depression and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's other ways to skin that cat rather than.
Yeah.
Hallucinogenic compounds times. Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, seriously. So, yeah, that's just an example of where somebody's priorities really are. And coaching really kind of brings that out. Like, Excuse me.
Yeah.
Aren't you already on X, Y, Z, and D, you know? Yeah, but, you know, I think I just need a little bit more. I need a boost. Anyhow, so, but at least, you know, at least your client's cutting the path for you. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
Exactly.
You're not the one cutting the path. They're like, you're the one saying, okay, you know, let's take another look at some stuff and really reconsider some things. And let's look at some definitions of addiction and abuse and those things and see what's going on.
Well, that and how they view the person helping them, I think with that approach is better, because you go there talking about, hey, you know, let's figure out what your goals are and then let's help you get to those goals. So they're, you know, they see you through, hey, this person's helping me essentially get what I want. Accomplish these goals. They're trying to help me in that process. Whereas, you know, you see someone through a whole different lens of, hey, this person's trying to keep me from smoking weed, right? That, you know, you're gonna talk to them a different way. You're gonna, you know, have you know, different kind of mental roadblocks with that person and stuff like that. So
yeah,
I like that method a lot. I think that's probably not used enough.
It isn't. Yeah. And just so you know, I mean, when somebody is looking at chemicals that hard, you know, it's either straight up chemical fiend or there's some significant trauma and having the EMDR or the DBT person in the suitcase they refer to. So don't, you know, I'm not trying to sound trite or overly look at a situation in a negative light, but it is what it is sometimes. Yeah, man, I think, how are we doing on time? Okay. So, well, I just got under 3 minutes. Any wrap up thoughts you have on your end?
Yeah. I mean, I just think to kind of bring everything full circle. No, you know, for the people that need it, we gave different kind of examples, right? For the people that, for the example, the young man who's feeling isolated, you know, depressed, having maybe for that person going back into a community, trying to make relationships upon leaving, then later leaving that community that are going to be long lasting, that can be a good thing. But for people who kind of are just have been through that cycle, have had the relationships, and then they just continuously feel the need to get back into a program searching for something that essentially isn't there, that can be a problem. And I think that was just kind of the conversation here. I think it's not a really well talked about issue, and I think it's something that goes on perhaps a lot more than people would think. So I think it was good for us to kind of touch different sides of that issue.
All right.
Do you have anything else?
Well, real good, man. I appreciate you coming on the show, Brent. It's always a pleasure. Can't wait to get you on again, get some more thoughts from you about recovery and those things, and continue to check in on your progress. Well, it's always a pleasure. So thanks for coming, and can't wait to see you again. Folks, there it is, another fantastic show here. And don't forget to see us on Apple Podcast and iHeartRadio. Excuse me. We also have a Facebook page, Concierge Coaches, and our Instagram is Concierge_coaches. So see us on social media, and we'll see you here next time on the Concierge Coaches Show on LA Talk Radio. See you later.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz only.